I have a lot of understanding when I'm talking to folks that want to get into the franchise business that I've lived all the fears that they live. Will I find a location? Do I have enough money? Can I hire somebody? Will I learn how to make ice cream? And so we are, my son and I, who started this with me, we're a great resource for anybody that wants to come on board with Corky Candles.
All right, everyone. Today's episode is with Dave Straub, founder of Cork and Candles, which is more interesting than what I thought it was going to be. This is why we remain open-minded. My initial thought was, this is retail. Retail doesn't work in franchising. It hasn't for many years since e-commerce became a thing. But this is not. This is more hospitality. It's more entertainment. There's nothing like this out there. Reasonable investment. Dave seems like the right guy, entrepreneurial background, successful franchisee, multi-unit franchisee. We always like when franchisees become franchisors, great profit margins, simple labor model. I think there's a lot to like here, Cliff.
I agree with you. And, you know, you opened up the show with, I'm not quite sure about this. And I get that. I get it. We've also been doing this long enough to know that you got to park your opinion, engage, listen, and learn, and remain open-minded. So I want to just echo that because it is so important. And we tell our clients every day, remain open-minded, follow the process, engage with the brands. This is the example of that. Candles? Are you kidding me? I'm curious, Justin, like, why would you recommend to look at a candle brand? When you see the unit economics of this brand, his cost of goods, his net income, his item 19, this guy's making $500,000 a year net between two locations in writing in the FDD. This is a brand where you go, all right, I get it now. The fad piece, because I know clients love to tell us about fads, candles have been around since 3000 BC. I don't see candles going anywhere. Again, I you know, you reflect on all these shows and you walk into these interviews really with your own head trash and baggage and preconceived ideas, right? And then one at a time, they dispel them. It's remarkable. It's like even us with all these years of experience, we fall into this trap of, as you would call it, being judgy, right? You're judgy. You're being like, why would you say that about the brand? You don't, why would you say there's no money in candles? You don't know anything about candles. You don't even know what you're talking about. You get on the call with this guy and you're like, holy shit, did I just get schooled?
Yeah.
I think this could be a good episode. I encourage the listeners, stay to the end. Stay to the end on this one. It's worth listening to.
Give it a shot. Some interesting stories there. I think the question mark for me is, can they start moving units? They have to grow. So they have three corporate locations. Sounds like one franchise. He is doing development in-house. So they're not partnered with a franchise sales organization, as far as I know. So he's got to get the brand out there. It's time to grow, right? Grow or die for any young franchisor. So let's see if it starts picking up some traction here. Good episode. Enjoy, everyone. Thanks for hanging with us, Dave. So I got to say, when I saw you that you were coming on to the show, my first thought was like, really? Like candles? Obviously, I've never seen anything like this in franchising. It's a very unique concept. But the more I've dug in, this is very impressive. Your website is awesome. Killer. My first thought was, this doesn't look like a franchise to me. It looks really high-end, almost like corporate, luxurious. You know, like some businesses you walk into and it's like, oh, this is very expensive. This is corporate development. Sometimes franchisors just look a little cheesy. Their websites are kind of corny. The in-store furniture and fixtures are kind of cheap, right? They want to make things affordable for the franchisee. I don't know if that's just your... that location that you're in, if that's like your flagship, which is a little bit higher end, or if that's how all your stores are going to look, but it looks expensive.
Yeah, so I can give you some background there. So 3 years ago, when we decided we would open, that was the end of COVID. So we actually signed a lease where I am now in June of 2021, but we were not allowed to take access to the space until January of 2022. In some respects, that worked for us because it gave us 6 months to try to figure things out. And one of those things we wanted to figure out, Justin, is what your observation is what did we want the vibe to be? My wife and I, we were taking vacation in Napa Valley, and I walked into the store and I saw these really cool looking wine barrel tables and chairs. So a little bit more about me and candle making. When I was 12, I would make candles in my basement with my father. My father was an artist, and I had three candles that I would make and put them in a wagon and go door to door taking orders. And then I'd come back to the basement and make them with my father. They were an icebox candle, taper candles, and a Christmas tree candle. And today, one of our candle making classes is of that Christmas tree candle. So we invite guests to come in and do something that I did almost 50 years ago. But my dad did woodworking, painting, and he worked in some other mediums for art. And so he passed on to me the gift of woodworking. So if we could walk the camera around, you would see I replicated those barrel tables. We require two of those tables and a bench. The bench is where guests, after their experience, can take their candles and we get a photograph of them. And they'll post that. We hope that they tag us. But in addition to those tables, we have a craftsman here that makes all of our tables. Amish country is not far away. The Amish men make all of our cabinets. And so we wanted this space to have a vibe that kind of what you described, that people come in and they go, wow, I just like this place. And then you add all the scents, all the candle scents. It smells great in here. So it's a place that people like to hang out, which ties to our tagline, which is where friends gather. So we trademarked where friends gather, and we want this to be a place where people just want to come and gather.
So will all of these local craftsmen be making this this furniture for all of your franchise owners? And are your franchise owners going to be able to do all this for your item 7 is $240,000 to $400,000?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yep.
Wow.
So the Amish men, their last big project was actually in Florida, where you guys are. So from Pennsylvania to Florida, they went and installed our cabinets.
They're traveling, or you already have a team? They're
no,
everywhere.
They travel. Yeah.
You're sending the Amish around the country to install this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's very cool. I'm sure they're insane craftsmen. I'm being sincere. I'm sure they are amazing when it comes to woodworking. I watched them on a time-lapse camera build like a 10,000 square foot barn and then move it to a different location like in a day.
Someone flew a group of them into North Carolina. Did you see that? They popped up like 15 homes in like 6 hours and went back home.
I believe it. Yeah, they're remarkable craftsmen. That's for sure. That's cool. So how many square feet is that space? I want to echo everything Justin said. I thought the store interior was so well appointed. It has a rich feel to it. It almost feels like you could almost do like designer handbags in there. It had a vibe to it, like a look and feel. You know, the little cubbies and the boxes and the woodworking and the trim. Yeah, it's got a very cool vibe. How many square feet is the store?
So where I am now, it's 2,505 feet. Our second location was 1,600 square feet. And our third location is 2,465 square feet, and the franchisee is around 1,600 square feet. We feel if you can get somewhere around 2,000, 1,600 to 2,000, if you go beyond that, then you can start doing some additional things. So at this location, we offer a light menu. We have four different charcuterie boards that our guests can order and we would make for them, and then three different flatbreads. All of our locations are BYOB. And so what food does for us, it enhances the guest's experience. After you are finished making candles, we want those candles to go home with you. Some similar concepts, you have to pay money for those candles to be mailed to you, or you have to drive back the next day and pick them up or walk around for a couple hours shopping, and then you come back to the store and get them. But we felt it was important that candles go home with the groups that made them. So we put them in front of fans. You can make wax harden faster by either cooling the temperature, put them in a refrigerator, or you blow air across the top. So we have a cooling station where we have fans blowing air across the top. It takes 18, 20 minutes for the candles to harden, for us to box them and bag them. But during that time frame, our guests can be having another glass of wine. They can have a flatbread, charcuterie board. And so the food enhances the where friends gather concept of people enjoying time together. But as a business, it also provides some additional wallet share. So they come in for the experience, and food is an add-on. People don't have to buy food, but if they want food, then it's an add-on. In this location, that will add about 8% of our total revenue to the top line.
Is this new? Do you say that because it's new, or it's always been part of the business model since day one?
No, it's always been part of it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And food right now represent non-cooking food, easy food, pre-packaged food is 8% of revenue.
So a store that doesn't have the space for the equipment, they can outsource for those charcuterie boards or other items to be delivered. We actually have an oven. You know, it would look like a little something bigger than a microwave, and the flatbreads are cooked in that. So we'll take dough and we'll top it with toppings, and we'll make the flatbread. The charcuterie boards is we have all the fresh ingredients here, and we make that fresh.
Okay, interesting.
Man, or people can have food DoorDash delivered in, right?
Yeah, so people will bring in food. The interesting thing about the food thing is when you're making candles, your space in front of you is filled with fragrance oil, wax, vessels, wicks, and other ingredients that you need to be an artist to make a candle. And if people bring in their own food, well, now the question is, where are we going to put that? And the way we operate the concept is when you're finished making your candle, we remove all that stuff from your table, and then we bring the food out and replace what was there with the food. We do allow people to bring their own food, but sometimes it can make things a little messy because there's just not space for it.
Okay.
I have never smelled a candle that I didn't want to eat. So I can imagine that when you're dealing with all these, seriously, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
For the
guests at home, for the listeners at home, he's showing a martini glass,
espresso martini
candle that looks delicious.
Right. It's like I had these things all over my house when I was a kid in New York. My mother she just loved this stuff. And we had the sundae, the banana split, right? We had all those. And then we had... And it just triggers something, whether it's the scent or it's the look, just visually you want to eat. You're like, I want something. So I could see why people would go there and get hungry, just smelling all these different delicious flavors, right?
So Cliff, you bring out an interesting point that is real for our guests. And you talk about smell, taking someone back in history to a memory. So there are scents that we have here that just take people back to a place, to grandmother's house. So it's not just the candles that look like food or smell like food, but there are memories. We had a woman come in here by herself. She was celebrating a one-year anniversary of someone that had passed away, and she wanted to make a candle in memory. And there was a smell that we had here that reminded her of her friend that had passed away. And so she actually named her candle after this friend that had passed away. But it was something that she wanted to do to honor that person, but it was the scent that was important to her and brought her to our store.
Yeah, scents and music. Right?
I was just going to say, scents and music can take me back to an exact
decades.
Time and place. Totally.
Decades. And and not just bring it back, Dale, like you have granular detail of that memory and of that event, and whether you're with a parent or a loved one or a friend or it's whatever. It's amazing how just like that. You could be in a mood, you could be somewhere else, you could be very deeply involved in thought, but a scent or a song can bring you right back. I agree. It's a very cool concept. So let's just say 2,000, maximum 2,400 square feet, Justin, development costs in the item seven were 200 and say it again?
240,000 to 400,000 total project cost.
Yeah, for 2000. I'm thinking that on the low side, that's not that common. By the look of it, it looks like it's at least 350 minimum. Is that what you're saying, David, on average to open these things? What's the number you're seeing?
Yeah, so what I can repeat is what's actually in the FDD. So in the FDD, it will say $237,180 to $398,894. So in round numbers, it's just north of $230,000 to just south of $400,000 for development costs.
Yeah.
And then right. The other.
So what did it cost to open like the last two stores? What are you seeing in like your area?
So the last store was around $200,000.
Really?
We opened wow. For ourselves.
Why? Like, drill down on that. What attributed to that low brick and mortar investment? Was the store previously something that was already built out and you're like, wow, I could slip right in here? How'd you do that?
So we use the same designer for all locations. Even the franchisees use the same designer. And when she walked into this last location, her expression was, this place has good bones. And so if a place has good bones, and I spent $0 on renovating plumbing. My first location, I spent $4,000. My second location, I spent $25,000 on plumbing. My third location, I spent zero on plumbing. My first location, I spent $12,000 on electric. My second location was $55,000. My third location was $26,500. And so then it's a matter of putting some paint on the wall, getting the cabinets in there and the tables. And so the fact that that third location had good bones means that the costs aren't as high because someone else did the work for you prior to that.
This is a great conversation and one we have not had, which is all the unintended costs. I love the space. You do? Oh, I love it. It's beautiful. It's in the perfect location. You have inappropriate, like the wrong plumbing. You have the wrong electrical, you have no drop ceiling, you have no ADA restroom. I know you love the space, but this is going to be $450, like to get this thing. They don't know that. The listener who has not done this before with brick and mortar space, site selection, lease negotiation, construction, permitting, prototype design, they don't know that you just chose a space that, yes, is good, but it's going to cost you $150,000 more than that other space that's also on a comparable location. Because it has, as you call it, good bones, right? Which and your good bones, David, is very different from Jimmy John's good bones or a yoga studio's good bones. So working with the franchisor and saying, hey, David and team, what do you think of this space? Space is going to cost you a fortune to develop. Yeah, I like the location, but you have no idea how much it's going to cost. You have to rip the floor up. We're going to have to do this. We have to do that. Permitting. You happen to be in a blue state, so good luck getting a permit and extrapolating the loss of time. It just depends where you are. Such a good comment to hear you kind of get specific into what it costs to relocate electrical, plumbing, wiring, a demising wall, etc.
And Cliff, this is exactly why when people say, nah, I'm not going to sign the franchise agreement. I'm going to find the space first and then I'll sign you are getting into a brick and mortar business. The support starts with site selection. Right, you want to lean on the franchisor to understand what type of space are you looking for? How much parking do you need? What type of visibility? Can I go into an elbow? Do I need to be on an end cap? What, right? So the franchisor should be supporting you with this because they have experience doing this multiple times before. And that's one of the ways that they add value. And there's nothing more important than location when it comes to brick and mortar. It's everything. It could mean the difference between success and failure. And it's something that can't be changed. That's it. Once you sign a 5-10 year lease, you could change the food, you could change the scents, you could change the colors. Can't change the space. So
that's right. That's so true. Good bones in the wrong location, still failure.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I totally agree. So many people misstep on site selection. So I appreciate your comment. You just triggered so many thoughts on what we have dealt with in our career in franchising with people falling in love with spaces and not understanding, you know, the consequences of it. All right. So that's good.
So a comment that you said is something that we live through daily, and that is people tend to want to find a location first before they sign.
That's right.
And the challenge to any franchisor is, I really can't give you any assistance until you become a franchisee. First you need to be a franchisee, and then you get the support.
It would not be fair to your franchise owners if you're supporting people who have not bought a franchise yet. Can't do it. You don't have unlimited resources.
100%. And any commercial real estate broker that wants to work for someone for free that doesn't even have a fully executed franchise agreement, well, you're an idiot and you deserve to be taken advantage of by the client and run around town looking at space for someone who hasn't even committed to anything.
Well, the fact is they're not going to do it. And the other fact is a lot of spaces that are being found right now are off market. So if you think that you're perusing the internet, finding all the available spaces in your area, you're not.
That is true, David. Some of the best space we've ever found is space that's currently being occupied by a franchise that's either being evicted or is not renewing in several months and is not on the market. That is such a true statement, Justin.
Yeah. So 20 years ago, 2003, 2004, my wife and I purchased our first franchise. So now I'm a franchisor, but in 2004, we bought a Brewster's Real Ice Cream franchise and we bought two. And I did what we're talking about. The franchisor, after the discovery day, called and said, "Are you in?" I said, "I'm looking for a piece of real estate." And they kind of said, "You know, you should look over here." So I looked over there and I found a piece of real estate. And I said, "I'm ready to commit." And the guy flies up from Atlanta, Georgia to Pennsylvania. And he wanted me to be in Kennett Square. And I said, "I'm ready. Here's my check." And he said, pulls this map out. The map has lots of circles, and every circle is a committed territory. And he says, "Dave, where's Longwood?" And I said, "Longwood, that's right next door to Kennett Square." He says, I can't let you have Kennett. I said, "What do you mean you can't let me have Kennett? You told me you wanted me in Kennett. Now you're telling me you can't." He says, "Somebody else has Longwood." I didn't realize how close Longwood was to Kennett. The guy also bought a second location in Jennersville, which is right down the street. How would you feel if you had Kennett? Or had Longwood, and I gave Kennett Square to somebody else, you wouldn't like it." And then he said something that resonates really strong with me. He said, "Dave, you need a circle on the map. We can move the circle, but until you give me that check, you are not in the game."
That's right.
If you want to be in the game,
put your flag in the map.
You got to hand me that check. And so we put a circle on the map. And guess what? Did I open it up in that circle? No, I didn't open up in that circle. I found a location that was in a different spot. And so I have a lot of understanding when I'm talking to folks that want to get into the franchise business, that I've lived all the fears that they live. Will I find a location? Do I have enough money? Can I hire somebody? Will I learn how to make ice cream? And so we are, my son and I, who started this with me, we're a great resource for anybody that wants to come on board with Cork and Candles.
That's great.
Cliff, let's dive into the model though. I want to understand, is it class-based? Can I walk in just with a friend or on a date or just to sit down and make a candle? How does it work? Am I signing up? Is everything structured and scheduling? How does it work?
Yeah, so the answer is yes to all those options. So we take walk-ins. It's rare that we have walk-ins. We use Toast, which is a popular POS system for restaurants. So we're reservation-based. It tells us what table we're putting you at or what group. Toast tells us, can I take another party of six or is my space limited? I can't take any more parties over 10. So Toast is a great POS system for our business. The vast majority of our revenue comes from what we call cheeks and seats. So we promote so that we get more reservations, we get more cheeks and seats. And so people are making reservations. So my staff who does the scheduling can look at, well, how many reservations do I have for the upcoming Saturday? How many employees do I need on staff?
You have to have a target customer, you know, profile.
So it's women 25 and older. 80% of our customers are women, groups of women, girls' night out, and then I always add, and smart men come with them, right? So it's the guy that says, "I don't want to make a candle. Like, I don't know, that's let me go kill something or cut a piece of wood, chop something down. But when guys come in here too, it's really a project. It's you're in the workshop, but you're not using wood. You're using wax. And to make something fun like this, you get, this is a class. We run this as a class. This is this month's class. So people come in, the vast majority of people do what we call is our signature experience. And after seating, there's a clipboard in front of them that has a bunch of instructions in place to write. And they would walk into, and the scent library has over 45 different scents. I will see people spend 15, 20, or even more time in there choosing the scent that appeals to them or scents. So Cliff and Justin, the two of you could come here, you could choose the same two scents, but Justin, you're doing a 90-10 split on the mixture of those scents. And Cliff, you're doing a 60-40. So even if you've chosen the same two scents, each of you are going to make a very personalized candle that's unique to for you. So people will spend 20 minutes in there smelling all the scents, writing down which one scent, then the second scent. And each guest will make two candles during their experience. Once they come back to the table with their two fragrances of choice for each candle, we then go and get the liquid version of the wax that they were smelling. So in the scent library are tins with wax that has been scented. We provide additional information in there. So there are scent cards that tell you the top note, the mid note, and the base note. So similar to perfumes and wines, we tell you what that scent is made of, what's going to hit your nose in the first 10 minutes after you light the candle, what comes next and what hangs around in the room. And that's important information. So if you want to pair one scent with another, if there's some similar notes to those scents, then you feel, well, they're probably going to pair well because there's some similarities there. Then we bring the fragrance oil to the table. They create that 90-10 split or that 60-40 split. They pour it into a vessel that they chose. They choose their own vessel. We have a number of colors here. And then we bring hot wax. Each location has two 100-pound wax melters. We have a proprietary wax blend that we know will have a great scent throw when it's lit. That's called a hot throw when your candle's lit. It's a hot throw when you're smelling a candle that's not lit. That's a cold throw. And we created this wax also so that we know that it sets up in that 18 to 20 minute period. So everyone's going home with their candles. We bring the hot wax, they pour it in the fragrance with the fragrance oil, they mix that up for a minute, we take it away to the cooling station. They can decorate their candle with crystals at the end if they choose to. That's an add-on. If they choose not to, then the candles are boxed and bagged and they go home in a 90-minute period. In addition to that signature experience, we run candle-making classes. So this is this month's candle-making class. We make things that look like banana splits. We do margaritas. We do ice cream sundaes. We do, next month is a heart-shaped strawberry cake that looks and smells just like a delicious cake topped with strawberries. So the two experiences, signature experience where they're making candles and vessels, and then we run candle-making classes that we call novel, there for our novelty candles.
Very cool. I have to ask you, because I know someone is wondering this. Do you use paraffin wax? What type of wax do you use?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we actually use five different waxes. So we use a natural wax blend for the signature candles and some other experiences. But paraffin is a harder wax. And if you're going to make what's called a pillar candle, so this is a vessel candle, you can put a soft wax in here. If you want a candle to stand on its own, and there's no vessel around it, the wax becomes the vessel, you're going to use paraffin because that is a harder wax, or you're going to use a palm wax. Palm wax, when you heat it and it cools, it looks like it's crackling. It has a crackly look. So we use that to make our cereal pieces for our Fruit Loops cereal. So it looks like it's sugary, but it wouldn't look good for a pillar candle. So if you've ever seen a taper candle is made out of paraffin wax. And even though paraffin kind of has this bad reputation, it's a natural wax. It comes out of the ground. Oil comes out of the ground.
Okay.
Palm wax, you're destroying a palm tree and you're actually abusing it more than paraffin wax. But
What about synthetic fragrances and VOCs, phthalates, endocrine disruptors?
We don't have that. Yeah, we don't have that.
Okay, everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great to hear. Yeah. The parabens and the phthalates and all the voxes, right? This is the stuff that is affecting people's endocrine system and their nervous system, and the people are burning these things thinking they're healthy and they're trying to, you know, meditate with a candle. It's like meditate with a candle.
Aromatherapy.
Yeah, you're doing benzene and formaldehyde and dioxins and styrene. This is what you're inhaling. It's not exactly aromatherapy. Go back to the 90 minutes. So they're in there for an hour and a half because you gotta melt it, right? You have to soften it. You have to cool it. There's a lot going on in that 90 minutes. What's the economics? Let's stick with that margarita glass that you have. What's the cost of goods on that margarita out the door? My cost to build that or the banana split? What is the customer paying? I'm trying to understand the economics of this business.
Yeah, so I'll answer that question. Then we'll go a little bit higher level.
Okay.
And so this is a $62 experience for someone to come and make this one candle. If they do the signature experience, they're making two candles, and that's also $62. So regardless of the choice of signature versus a class, it's $62. There's a little bit more labor involved in a class because we're going to stand in front of you for an extended period of time. And the signature experience, we're going to greet you at your table. We're going to take you into the scent library. No, we're going to leave you alone for 20 minutes. I'm not going to hover over you while you are doing your personal selection of a scent. Then you're going to come back to the table and I'm going to bring fragrance oils back to your table. And now you're going to spend 10, 15 minutes trying to put two drops in, mix, smell. Am I doing the 90-10, the 60-40? So I'm going to leave you alone again. But with a class, I'm with you, our server. Servers in this industry are called chandlers. You get a cup of coffee from Starbucks, you're called a barista. You're in the candle business, you're a chandler. So our chandlers are with you a lot more. So the labor cost is a little bit higher. But if we look at our financial statements that are in the FDD, so I can quote these numbers. So in this location where I am, the last 12 months that are reported, revenue was $844,659. Net income, so one of you can do it. You can do the math here. I'll do it for you. The net income was $286,131. So the net income percentage is 33.9%.
And is that after a manager salary? Are you paying a manager or is that as an owner operator?
That's as an owner operator.
Okay.
Okay.
And the second location that is reported in the FDD, gross sales was $663,650. And net income is actually higher because rent in that location is much lower than this Class A space that I'm sitting in. And the net income there reported in the FDD is $302,611. So between two locations, you're over $500,000 in net income.
These are your locations.
Those margins are
incredible. These are ours. Yep.
So a U and one, let's just, because I'm trying to unpack that. So let's just say, are you literally the manager of one? Yeah, it is mind blowing. Let's be honest.
No, I don't work in the store.
Who's running the store you're sitting in?
We have a full-time manager. And the reason that is, you know, so Justin and Cliff, our focus needs to be on helping franchisees be successful. If I have to get dragged into the store because no one ordered the inventory or food, something went wrong with the food. So we have good employees that run the store. Everybody else, there's a few exceptions. There's some people that work 30 to 40 hours. So you could call that pretty close to full time. But everybody else is an hourly employee. So each store has a salaried employee and then they have a staff of hourly employees.
And how many of those will they have to do $600,000 to
$800,000? Surprisingly, this business is seasonal. So candle sales in general, retail candle sales in our experience business marry up to the same calendar. So we're busy from September to May into June, but June, July, August are slow months. Now, we don't know if that's unique to Pennsylvania because the Jersey Shore is pretty close and people bail out to go to the beach and they leave the area. Or it could be parents are busy with little leagues and putting mulch down in their yards and they're not going out for experiences. But when school starts, then people get busy by doing things and they don't have to mulch their yard anymore and baseball is ending. So we're kind of curious. We're talking to some folks in Florida. We're curious to see if Florida has the same seasonality. In this store, we probably have 7 to 9 part-time employees that get us to that $844,000 worth of revenue.
And how many of them will be working at any given time? Four so per
Saturdays,
shift or something?
Yeah, Saturdays we could have four to five working. Okay. Busy days, 4 to 5. And then Monday's our slowest day. There could be the equivalent of one person working the full day. So someone could come in and work a morning shift and then they leave and they're replaced by someone else. But this past Monday was a holiday. We were busy on Monday. So there was more staff here on Monday.
So in that item, I want to go back to the item 19. Did you do an add back and treat the item 19 like if you bought this location and you were an owner operator, this is what you make? Because that is a remarkable net for a brick and mortar brand.
It's basically retail.
I agree with you.
Yeah. So
I agree. Your item 19 is insane. How many locations are currently operating?
So we have 4 locations operating.
Four operating, all in the same region of the country, all up by you or no?
Yeah. Now three are by us and one is by a franchisee.
Okay. All right. We have the staffing model. We have the investment. We have the earnings, which I'm still blown away by. The cost of goods you don't want to talk about because...
Cost of goods sold runs 23%.
23. So, and that's including food. You have everything in there, food as well. Okay.
Wow, that's a great gross margin.
Labor runs around 8%.
Wow.
8?
Yeah,
So explain that. So you probably have dozens of customers in there at once paying $62 while just 3 or 4 people are working.
So our state, you can have a tip wage. We have a tip wage, we have a guaranteed wage, and these are for the hourly employees. And this is a very typical experience. So the Chandler is with you through the entire experience. And so because of the tip wage, the total labor cost is 8 to 10%. Because in essence, the guests are subsidizing.
Right. They're making minimum wage plus tips and probably doubling their income.
And these tickets are big. These are large average tickets. This isn't like a $5 foot long. These are $120. These are $60 tickets. So they're probably being well paid on the tip side.
Yeah. So the guaranteed minimum is $16 an hour. Sometimes people have made as much as an upper mid 20s per hour. But in the state of Pennsylvania, the minimum tippable wage, I think it's $2.84. The minimum wage in Pennsylvania is $7.25 or $7.50. Yeah,
they adopted federal.
We pay our staff $5 an hour. And then everything up to the 16 and beyond is a tip. It's subsidized by the tip. If for some reason someone doesn't get to the $16, then the company is subsidizing that. But at the end of the year, payroll is going to be 8 to 10%.
Okay.
This versus is a state-specific versus you buy a restaurant, labor is going to be 35% of the bottom line.
Absolutely. And your cost of goods is going to be over 30%.
Yeah, because you're going to have waste.
Paper.
And
Your cost of goods included the boxing, the paper, the out-the-door bag, everything, all
everything.
In.
Everything. Yep.
Very good. My last question that I had, Justin, was to understand all the revenue streams. I understand the cost of the experience. There's food. Are you doing summer? You did say it was seasonal. Are you doing summer camp? Are you doing corporate events? Are you doing team building? Anith?
Yeah, so
what are the revenue streams?
Yes. So there are really three revenue streams. There's retail. So when you walk in our store, the first thing you're going to see is retail. Everything in a vessel that we make here, or these fun candles that I've shown one of them, people can come in here and they can buy a gift, or they can buy something for themselves, or while they're in the store, they could buy a retail candle. That's one revenue stream. That's something a little bit less than 10% of the revenue. Then there's the food that is unique to this location. That's somewhere around 8%. And then the rest is experiences. Now you, from a marketing perspective, Cliff, what you're getting into is who do you want to have their cheeks in these seats? Do you want to have corporate cheeks in seats? Do you have date night cheeks in seats? Do you want to have camp cheeks in seats? But they would be doing something that would generate revenue because somebody is making a candle. So we have a lot of date nights. We have a lot of girls' night out. We have bridal parties. We have birthday parties. And something that that is a result of COVID is these companies that are still allowing people to work remotely, but they want them to come back to the office. Well, how do? They do events. So they take them for axe throwing. They take them for bowling, and they take them here for corking candles. So Vanguard has been in here dozens of times. SEI has been in here dozens of times. There are companies that are choosing us as an outing. A private equity firm rented the whole place out and had their staff come here and make candles. Most of them were women. The guys went and played golf, but the women and a few men from the private equity firm came in here to make candles. So as a franchisee, you could choose in the summertime, I'm going to run camps here. We're going to bring kids in. We're going to give them a flatbread pizza for lunch. And from 10 to 3, we're going to do some activity that's candle related. But the revenue is still going to come under, we did an experience with somebody.
How did you let the PE firm know you're even in business? Are you doing direct mail? Are you doing all digital marketing? How are you acquiring customers?
So interesting. So people find us. We are very videogenic. We are very photogenic. So if you go to, you go just Google Instagram, put in Instagram, corking candles, and we are going to come up and you're going to see hundreds of videos. We do something else to generate Google reviews while people are here.
Dave, are these your videos or are you having customers come in and just post their experiences?
I don't ask them to do it. They just do it.
Nice. Yeah, that's what you get with experiential brands like this. Customers spread the word.
So we do invite influencers in. So we give them a free experience.
Smart.
We focus in on foodies because people are following foodies. People that like to go out, follow foodies. And we have these candles that are some form of, they're either food or a drink. So the foodie influencers come in and they make food. So we had a foodie influencer that we love, Molly, here in Philadelphia. She came in and made the cereal bowl candle. It had over 1 million views for making that candle. So
the cereal, the cereal. It looked like cereal. It was like Fruit Loops, right? It looked like Fruit Loops or something.
There's a woman that lives in the center that has over 500,000 followers. She came in and made a candle, and then we sold them as far away as California.
It is crazy. Justin, you think about this business, you know, because I'm thinking about candles, and I'm like, man, because I love watching Westerns and all these old movies. I'm like, a candle. You know, you think about a candle. You know what I mean? It's like, this has been around since like 3000 BC.
Fire?
No, candles. Candles have been around forever. Whale's fat, right? Or whale oil. They've been using
It's been around since the beginning of it. It's like, how did anyone do anything after dark?
And then you think about things that, no one uses an abacus anymore. Like no one uses something that was made this long ago. Candles have actually been able to survive. Like the fact that they're literally obsolete, but they found another area like religion and aromatherapy and ambiance. And, you know, look, you want to have an intimate night, you set up some candles around the hot tub, right? Think about how a candle has just evolved. And I know that people are going to say, you think this is a fad? Yeah, it started in 3000 BC. I think its end of life is coming up.
Like, it's an interesting point. There's nothing fat about a candle. No.
This thing has, you go to a church, you're lighting candles. You go here, you light candles. You got vigils everywhere, lighting candles. There's candles everywhere. It's just really, it's unbelievable to me how this thing has just stayed with the invention of the wheel, the invention of the spear. Like, it stays with that era and has never really gone out of style. It just keeps reinventing itself. I just think it's fascinating.
Candles create a vibe. There's something about a candle and the scent that it gives off. It's a mood. It's a vibe.
My wife loves this stuff. She does. There's always something burning in here. And I'm sure, you know, they're not his candles. They're not, you know, clean. I got to figure out what she's burning.
What do you guys do though? Like, what kind of scents? What do you?
She always does cake. It's something that makes me want to overeat. Yeah, it's always something like fruit. Well, there's lavender. It depends. Depends on the mood. Like you said, you're trying to set a mood. You light a candle relative to the mood. If it's the holidays, it's going to be a pine cone or a pine scent.
Yeah, I like a woodsy, musky, you know, masculine pine, tobacco.
Tobacco?
I love that stuff. Oh, yeah. What I got a little tobacco musk going in the background right now.
Is that a candle burning in the background? He's
got to set the ambiance.
See, David? This was really good.
David, give us you have a cool entrepreneurial journey. I don't know if Cliff heard it before when we were talking, but it correlates to Cliff's entrepreneurial journey. Can you give us the Cliff's Notes version of the journey through life and business and before Cork and Candles?
Yeah. So I started my first attempt at a business in my early 20s after reading an article in Reader's Digest of these two guys that were scuba diving for golf balls and then sold them to the cruise ships. And at that time, I was a certified dive master and I played varsity golf for the University of Delaware. And I thought, boy, if I could just marry up golf and diving, that would be beautiful. So I got a list of golf courses from the USGA, called around and got two under contract, dove in the ponds, and then I eventually discovered that diving was a pretty slow process to extract one ball at a time from
What age are you doing this?
25, somewhere there. And then I bought a piece of equipment that was pretty heavy and looked like what you see on a driving range, but it sank down into the mud. It was made out of titanium. You tie a rope to it and you tie it back into a golf cart and you just go back and forth in the pond and everything. Time it pops out, you run in. So I extracted thousands of golf balls, but never sold one. I didn't make any money from this at all. But what I learned is what to do to solve problems, how to find a client, how to find the right equipment. But it didn't go anywhere. And then in the early 90s, I started a business called Time Saving Services. And I saw a need where your dry cleaning would be picked up at your house, or actually I didn't do house pickups, but it was all corporate. And at that time, the trips reduction program installed by President Reagan to reduce pollution caused carpooling to happen. And what happens when carpooling, you can't stop on your way home and get your dry cleaning or your glasses fixed or picked up your prescriptions. So we met with a new czar at all these large companies and they dedicated a room where I could have a film drop-off box, pick up and delivery dry cleaning, get your eyeglasses fixed. Kind of a Boy Friday business. I ran that for 3 years and sold that to one of my vendors. And after those 3 years, and then I was working at a company in 1999 that grew tremendously. It was a technology firm because of the .com era and the Y2K bug was coming. And so we staffed up, sold a lot of equipment. In 2000, your microwave still worked, your alarm clock still worked, so the Y2K fear didn't happen, and companies didn't buy any more hardware in 2000 because they bought it all in 1999 that would solve the problem that didn't exist. And we increased our staff to service all the problems, and then we had to lay off 20% of the staff. I didn't get laid off, but I thought someday someone could tap me on the shoulder and say, Dave, sorry, the cheese moved and you didn't move with it. Not your fault. You got to go. And so I said to my wife, we need to diversify. We need another asset that's going to make money that we control versus someone else says, sorry, Dave. And so I looked at Rita's Water Ice, Annie Ann's Pretzels, and Brewster's Real Ice Cream. And we ended up buying two Brewster's Real Ice Creams, and they suggested adding Nathan's Hot Dogs to get a dinner crowd, lunch crowd. So we added Nathan's Hot Dogs. But in that 20-year period, I also started an inflatable business. We had a 25-foot high rock wall, 11 inflatables, and we rented them to churches and community centers and homes. And then I became an international food importer, and we put a Waffle Hut, that was the name of the business, Waffle Hut, on Bear Creek Ski Mountain. And we imported all of our ingredients and equipment from Belgium, and we made Liege waffles, sold the Liege waffles to skiers. They just ski right up to the structure, buy a waffle and a drink, hot chocolate, cappuccino. And we ran that for 3 years, and then the mountain didn't renew my lease. But that was a cash cow. It was a green beer. And so I feel that I have a lot of empathy and understanding of what it takes to be a franchisee and what a franchisee wants from a franchisor, because I was one for 20 years. And I have this experience in building businesses. And so now my vision is to find people that have their personal reason, whether it's the same as mine or it's a different reason, that they want to go into the franchising world. And they like our experience business. And so nothing would give me more joy than 10 years from now, someone saying, "Dave, I'm so thankful that we signed on with you guys, because my life has just become my own. I have more time, and I'm profitable." And that's what my son and I are looking to do, is to find people that have that entrepreneurial bug, and they believe it's better to go to the franchising world because you get a playbook versus, I know from experience, it's not easy creating your own playbook. You don't know how you're doing. Like, I told you what my percentages are, and if my franchisees aren't in the line with those percentages, we're going to have some conversations about how we can improve those percentages.
That's right.
Exactly. You don't know what you don't know. These independents have no clue. That's great. You're a serial entrepreneur.
It's a cool story. That is a serial entrepreneur. That's right.
But it's weird, our parallel. So I also collected golf balls from country clubs and sold them. I'm a scuba diver from the 90s. Yeah. I've been a scuba diver most of my life. And you said one more thing. Oh, skiing.
Skiing.
I'm a big time skier. Yeah.
So I was a ski instructor for 10 years. That's actually how we got on the slope. The general manager of the ski slope that my wife and I were ski instructors at was a foodie. And he saw on a food channel these Liege waffles. And when I presented the idea to him, he says, "That's easy. That's a great idea." And he went to the owner of the mountain, and they approved it. So
that's great. I would pull right up to that thing. Fresh made, warm, with a espresso or a cappuccino. What the heck? Hey, it's just a hand. Just eat it with your, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take off your glove, eat it with your hand, put the wrapper and you're done. Go back out on the slopes. I hate taking off all my gear and going in, dealing with everyone, like, right? Unless I have to use the restroom. I think that's a great idea. I love that you're right. There's been trials, tribulations. You've had a long runway. You've got no lease renewal. Like, you've dealt with it. Never give up. Just keep going. So many people stop. They're like, "Yeah, I'm not doing that again. I had a lease. They didn't renew it. It really hurt. I don't want to do that ever again." And that's it? You're done? "Yeah, I raked golf balls. I didn't sell any, didn't make any money. Entrepreneurship's not for me." Like, wow. Like, you just kept going. I love that part. And I think that in a crazy way, it's like, how do you really become successful as a business owner? Never give up. Just never give up. Sometimes, yeah, you fail. Sometimes you misstep. Sometimes shit happens, but don't give up. Just keep going. I think you're inspiring.
So we don't like the word failure. We call it a learning
experience. Yeah.
Totally.
And the more hard things that you get through, when the next hard thing comes, then you don't give up. You just, I conquered 20 hard things already. This one's just another hard thing. It's not even hard. It's like, I know that tomorrow something's going to break. I know that next week, maybe it's next week, maybe it's 30 days from now, someone's going to quit that I thought was my cracked employee. Susan. Or they're going to fall, they're going to slip and fall and go out on workman's comp. But I don't know what it is, but we'll handle it when it comes.
But if you didn't have a problem to fix, what would you be doing?
Exactly.
I mean, isn't that what life and business is? Like, we just just fix the next problem. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's rewarding.
We have employees that are to work and serve our customers. And as owner, I solve the problems that nobody else wants to solve or can solve.
Very cool, Dave. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. Your brand is very interesting. I love your entrepreneurial background. Again, when I first heard of this, I wasn't sure, but there's more there than what I was expecting. I think it's pretty neat.
This is why we tell our clients, stay open-minded, and we do the same, right? We do the same. We got to remain open-minded and look what you learn. Yes, you have four look. I get all that, but boy, these unit economics, this is worth looking into. Dave, thanks so much. Great meeting you. Thanks for your time. It was wonderful talking to you.
Yeah. And if there's ever a reason to have me back, the story is always evolving. Or if you wanted to dig deeper into something, I'm happy to come back. You guys were great.
We'd love to do that. You got it. Take care. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit subscribe for more great content. And if you're thinking about investing in a franchise, whether it's the one you just heard about or another opportunity, reach out to us at cliffn@franocity.com. That's cliffn@franocity.com. We look forward to working with you.